when Lewis Baker rattled in a goal of the season contender to put Reading 1-0 up at Hull on Saturday, it seemed like a triumphant stride clear of relegation trouble was truly on the cards for the Royals. Alas, three whole goals later left us back on the edge of the drop zone. Just one goal, just one point, that's the story of episode 191 of the Tylerson Podcast. Welcome, I'm your host Mark Mayo, as per usual, and joining me on this late Monday evening, we've really found any nook and cranny we can to get in this podcast, and you know, all kinds of train delays and work delays have got in the way, but nonetheless, I'm joined by Matt Lawrence, aka Panners and Nutmegs, the Tylerson writer on all things stats and numbers. How is it going, Matt?
I am all good, considering we are now just one place above the drop, or one point above the drop, and six remaining, so it's getting down to crunch time, and I'm hoping we can have a cheery podcast by the end of the season.
It's amazing that it's not as if I'm lining you up for these defeats, but I'm not sure we've had the chance to discuss a win when you've been on the podcast.
I honestly don't think I've had a win as of yet. I think I am doom and gloom, aren't I? To be honest, I'm probably the most miserable person you get on these podcasts, to be honest.
Our official doom and gloom reporter. Yeah. Well, in that sense, let's crack on and talk about Hull. And then later on in the show, just let you know what's coming up. We'll have some pub chat where we'll have a brief look towards the play with the season, vote, and then the mailbag, of course, and previewing that lovely trip to Norwich, who are doing a little bit, they're doing all right, let's put it that way, as on Wednesday night. So let's crack on then and talk about Hull 3, Reading 1.
View from the Tylerson End, recapping this week's championship action.
So, Matt, to sum this up in a line, I'm going to say that we scored the hard one and then we missed all the easy ones. You don't have to pay much attention to the highlights to realise this was a game full of chances for both teams. And ultimately, in these sort of relegation battles, you have to be the one that takes the chances and you have to stand there and say, you know, maybe we were a bit lucky, maybe they did miss a lot, but we scored ours and we're on the wrong end of that this week. And Lewis Baker with a cracking opener from 25 yards. Yes, he has a lot of time to pick his spot, but he picks it brilliantly. And then from then on, it just kind of went downhill, created a lot of chances, had an offside goal ruled out. Hull took their chances, and here we are without a point.
Yeah, you really can't take anything away from that Baker strike. He shifted it onto his left foot and absolutely slapped it in from about 25 yards out, hasn't he? And I like the fact that the keeper looks like he's had his batteries taken out and just pretty much just falls and just kind of accepts what's happening. But yeah, it is just a case of us being a bit of a blunt knife, to be honest. We had opportunities, both of which on the break. We had the one chance where Oliveira was in down the right, and I think it was a 5v2, which somehow managed to go out for a goal kick when it was almost like there were too many options available for him on the ball. Yeah, and it's one of the last things you'd expect from a guy like Oliveira. If you're wanting that opportunity to fall to anyone, it's your number nine. And it was one of those where it's just so easy to square it, but it's happened. We didn't take the opportunity. Another one at one. I think we 1-0 up with the Barrow chance as well.
I think that was 1-1 when Mo Barrow, I think Rinomoto wins the ball quite high up the pitch.
Yeah.
Falls to Barrow 3 yards out, just to keep it to beat, and finds, you know, I don't know how wide goals are exactly. Is it about 9 yards or so? And the goalkeeper's leg is about 6 inches. And it's the leg out of the 9 yards. So,
that was a frustrating one. That was one of the few times when I was watching the game, because I didn't manage to get up to Hull myself. I was watching the game back last night in prep for this. So, it's one of the few times that Mo Barrow managed to get in behind, really. I felt like, and that's where he's best as well, when he gets in behind defences and he's able to stretch them, because people, they're not going to catch him. And if you look at some of the goals that he scored when he got the 10 last season, he was getting in behind more often. He was looking to beat his man. I don't think he does that as often as I'd like him to personally, whether that's a preference from Gomez where he likes to come to feet. But it's nice to see when he does get in behind. It would have been lovely if he could have finished that chance off. But I don't think you can take anything away from the keeper, to be honest. He's done an awful lot there and made a really good stop as well. I think we shouldn't be laying the blame wholly at Barrow's door there. It was a very good save, I thought.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other, or words to that effect. When it comes to if Martinez makes that save, you probably have a lot of Reading fans saying, "Isn't he a brilliant goalkeeper?"
Yeah,
which
it depends which side of the fence you're sitting on, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not too sure Martinez covered himself in glory with this one. He fumbled a relatively difficult shot to save for 2-1 and put it back into danger area. His positioning for the third is very poor, and. You know, aside from the chances that we missed, which kind of asked the question, were we hard done by? We hit the bar at 1-0, albeit it would have been an own goal had it gone in. We were caught on the break very easily. And I kind of wonder why that is, because that's not really something that we've had go against us very often this season. In, you know, no matter who's been in charge, I can't think of too many times when we've been so, you know, high up. And the ball's come over the top and we've just been it's been quite easy for players to run in behind. That happened for the first and third goal this time. And
yeah.
It seems a bit odd.
Yeah, there kind of just seemed to be a lack of pressure on the ball with a couple of the opportunities that they did create for the goals. I think for the first one, it's going to seem a bit harsh, but I think it was Baker's kind of culpable for both of them to an extent with not getting tight enough to his man and pressuring. He's there, but he's not at a distance where he can affect or influence the play. It's almost kind of a gesture defending, as I like to think of it. It's almost you're there, but you're not actually affecting or impacting the player's decision-making at all.
Yeah.
And it does still allow for the likes of Bowen and Grzycki to run in behind as they were doing for the goals as well, and for the chances that Hull had.
Well, the chances, you know, for Grzycki, I think they were relatively straightforward finishes. So
yeah,
there's that to consider. And with that in mind and with the miss in mind, do you think we were hard done by? Is this a game that, I mean, on another day, I think for me, I think we were kind of hard done by in the fact that when you, as I say at the top of the show, when you're in these late season games, you have to be the one that takes the chances. And you know, sometimes it is just a flip of a coin, a roll of a dice, whether they go in or not. It seems like, in terms of our own finishing, we were a little hard done by not to get another goal. But at the same point, Hull had themselves a lot of chances they missed. They had a couple of you know, decent chances from corners and whatnot to score. So where do you sit on the whole hard done by debate? Because I must admit, I'm really struggling. I think at the moment, I'm just about thinking that we are a bit hard done by. Because I think 2-1, I think if Barrow takes that chance, I think we go on and win that game.
I think, yeah, the Barrow chance was kind of the crux of the matter, really. If that goes in, we can look to shut up shop and really kind of batten down the hatches. And I do think we can probably squeeze out a result from there. But on the course of the whole game, I thought it was fairly even, to be honest. I mean, Hull probably had slightly more in the final third than us. If you look at a couple of our chances, they came from Hull mistakes. They weren't fashioned from good play from ourselves. I think if you had a look at one of the shot maps, for example, I think three of our five shots we had were from 25 odd yards out. And the only real chance we had was the Barrow one. Taking into account that we didn't have a shot at all from the Oliveira one, the Oliveira chance as well, which was squandered. But in terms of feeling hard done by, at the end of the day, you're coming up against a team in Hull that I think have scored two or more goals in the last 10 home games now.
Yeah.
So you're up against it from the start. You know, if you're not clinical, then you're going to get punished by them, with the likes of Grzycki and Bowen up to, out wide as well. And I thought Grzycki was one of them that caused us problems most of the afternoon, to be honest. The fact that he'd go one way or the other, he did cause us quite a few problems in that aspect as well. So, to be honest, I don't feel too hard done by. I would have taken a point as well, but I don't think I can be too disappointed in coming away without any points, because Hull are a very decent side and at home they're scoring a lot of goals. And you can see why on yesterday's or on Saturday's game, even, they create an awful lot of chances. Like you said, they missed a few as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it, that Hull are one of those teams. We played them early in the season. They were genuinely terrible.
And they were awful, weren't they?
I know.
Looked like a different team on Saturday.
And it was 3-0 that we beat them at home, and it felt like, I mean, two of those goals were late on, but it honestly could have been one of those days a better Reading team would have put 5 or 6 past them. And it shows the work of a manager, and perhaps people would say Gomez is kind of doing what Adkins is doing to a slightly lesser effect, but what Adkins has done there is incredible. Hull have scored 34 goals this year. Only the likes of Leeds, Sheffield United, Villa and so on have scored more than that. So they are right up there in that respect. And I think, because I know you sent in a couple of questions, Matt, to the podcast over the weekend saying, you know...
That's before I knew I was coming on.
Was it realistic that we could get 3 points? Was one of the things that you asked. And I mean, you can answer your own question if you want, but my opinion on it is, I think you have to go to these sort of teams, and this is what I'm going to say for the Norwich game, is that you have to go to these teams and think, today is the day they will slip up. If they give us one little sniff, we will make sure that we are the one team that gets the point off them or gets the 3 points off them. And we're just not quite good enough to do that at the moment, are we? If teams give us loads of chances, or if, you know, we get a bit of a lucky break in injury time and we grab the win that way, then great. But at the moment, when it comes to games where it is on a knife edge, one or two chances, you know, you take your one or two chances and that's how you get your goals, it's just not favouring us.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head there, to be honest. It's one of those where you've got to be at your top of your game, and you've got to be looking for the others to kind of lower their performance as well, and then for you to be able to capitalise upon that. So yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Obviously, every game it's realistic to get 3 points. It's a bit of a stupid question from whoever sent that in, to be honest. Both teams are there and it's 0-0 at the start. But we had chances to put the game to bed, so of course it was realistic that we were going to be given off. We got opportunities and we could have taken them. It's just a shame that I felt we looked slightly more open against Hull than we have done in recent weeks. I don't know what you thought of that. I know you mentioned that they managed to get in behind quite a bit, but yeah, I just really felt that we looked slightly more open. I couldn't quite put my finger on why that was, to be honest.
It feels to me like we played a high line that we haven't necessarily played too much, but
I don't know if we've realised that high line more because there's been less pressure.
They've actually done.
Yeah, they've actually exposed it because of a lack of pressure in midfield. But I felt Rinomota added a bit of bite in there. I don't know whether it was he got bypassed slightly or.
Well, he's only one man at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And he's a young player as well.
Yeah, it's his Baker doing enough in there. I mean, for me, on the third goal as well, I didn't think he did quite enough.
Yeah.
I think it was the third one.
It's hard with Baker as well, because we know that we are kind of putting a square peg in a roundish hole there. So
yeah,
it is one of those that...
Yeah, you're looking at... And he's got some real... Defensively, yeah, he looks... Sorry, it was the second goal I was meaning, not the third, with Baker. But yeah, for me, I think he was dropping in between the centre-halves and spraying things around, keeping things ticking over. And he does that beautifully. He's just really nice, sets a tempo, two-footed, can go both ways, good technician. I mean, I think there's a couple of passes he sprayed out, and you're like, you're quite a serious footballer in terms of technical ability at this level. But it's just... the question marks over whether he's got it defensively out of possession for me.
Yeah, and that's something that Jose Gomez is going to have to work out. Then let's hear what Jose Gomez said after the match. He sort of questioned Reading's focus and their mental concentration and their ability to see through the 90 minutes. So let's hear what Jose said, and then we'll come back and talk about where Reading stand in the overall relegation picture to round off the recap.
In the first half, we did very well. Not 100%, but almost we blocked, we stopped, we defended very well. We blocked their attack. And the first, in the first 15 minutes of the second half, We lost our focus and our organization, and we ran away from our game. You know, maybe the intention of the players was like protect the 3 points, and if we play out of our game, is we can show our weak points, and the goal is not that. The goal is playing under our process. And when this didn't happen, it was advantage for them, and they used very well. We could score, I think it was the 2-1, the Barrow, very good recover ball from Andy, and Barrow was alone with the goalkeeper. We could score the second goal, and everything should be different if we score that goal. And in football it's like that, if you don't kill, sooner or later they will kill you, and that's what happened. So now we are where we are. You know, we are in the position that we must look to the next game with maximum energy, maximum strength, and it will be another very tough game. We play Wednesday against Norwich. But I believe that if we keep the focus in our maximum, we can get something from there.
So, as we said at the top of the show, Reading are on 40 points from 40 games, 1 point with 8 better goal difference than Rotherham. We're on the same points with 4 worse goal difference than Millwall, if that makes sense. Wigan are 1 point above us, pretty much the same goal difference. Birmingham and QPR, 4 points above us, 5 points above the relegation zone. Bolton and Ipswich are gone now, basically. Ipswich winning at Bolton on the weekend certainly cured that one. So, you know, we're looking at 6 teams for one spot, and Reading aren't in it at the moment. But, you know, compared to where we are now, not necessarily to where we were last week, but to where we were at 1-0 up, and the fact that Rotherham won, the fact that Millwall won, the fact that Wigan got a late draw away to Bristol City, Birmingham won, all of those wins, by the way, against decent teams, Nottingham Forest, West Brom and Leeds. Really, there's, you know, if you could have painted a weekend to be as bad as possible, I can't imagine what else would have happened.
Yeah, I do think it was pretty much as bad as possible. I remember checking my phone at half time, seeing we were 1-0 up and 6 points clear of the relegation spots, and I thought, oh, this is it. We can start to relax. That's a 2-game buffer, especially given our goal difference over Rotherham slightly better than them. But yeah, we've been really dragged back into the thick of it, haven't we? Where we're going to be fighting for our lives. So the next 6 games are, pardon the cliche, they are cup finals now, aren't they? Every single one of them's a cup final for us and Rotherham, really. And like you say, some of the others have been really dragged into there. QPR can't buy a win. If the teams like us and Rotherham can pick up a couple of wins from now until the end of the season, and QPR carry on the vein of form that they're in, then they could realistically get dragged into it as well. I think we've got a slightly better goal difference than QPR as well, who are on minus 19. We're on minus 17 as well. So there's a lot of teams in there. Millwall on the same points as us as well, like you said, and Wigan on 41. I mean, if you're looking at the table or the form table, us and Rotherham are looking like the form sides down there, which is one way of looking at it.
Well, in the last six games,
positive way of looking at it.
Yeah, in the last 6 games, we are still, I think it's, we might have dropped to 9th in the form table now, but out of all of those teams, QPR are the worst by some distance, and then it's Birmingham.
Yeah, the QPR have been on an absolutely wretched run of form, haven't they? Yeah. But yeah, like you say, I think we're averaging 1.38 points at the moment in the last 8 games that we've had, and which is pretty much matched by Rotherham. But then you look at the teams above us, Wigan at 0.88 and QPR 0.63. So if we're running at double the rate for the next 6 games as QPR are, both us and Rotherham could feasibly leapfrog them.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to, you know, us going to Norwich and whatnot, teams from the bottom are going to beat teams from the top. Maybe only once, maybe a couple of times in the next few weeks, but it is going to happen. And Reading, you know, it might be that down to that sort of nicking an away win at Norwich or something like that might just be the thing that keeps us up. And
yeah. That
is the level we're at now with this sort of relegation battle. I don't think we can, you know, go to Norwich on Wednesday and say, oh, well, never mind, because it's in that stage. So, yeah, well, in terms of the fixtures on the midweek, just to update you on what's going to be going on, Rotherham at home to Aston Villa, Birmingham at home to Sheffield United, Wigan, they go to Hull, so three very difficult games there, but all, of course, perfectly winnable if you turn up and play very well. And, Millwall at home to QPR on Wednesday night is a huge game. If Millwall win that, then you, as we're saying, QPR really are right in the mire. And you know, QPR winning that might just elevate them, be enough to bring them out of it. Looking ahead to Saturday as well, when we're at home to Brentford. So Rotherham have Stoke away and Millwall go to Sheffield United. They're almost only difficult games at the moment. Wigan hosts Norwich on the weekend as well. So that's the state of play we're in at the moment. Teams, even when you host Sheffield United, even when you host Norwich and go to these teams, you still have to be in that frame of mind that any of our rivals could well pick up points and therefore we're going to have to do it. Simple as that. So we'll talk a bit more about the Norwich game in a little bit. Let's get on there and we'll have a quick pub chat and jump into the mailbag to keep episode 191 on the road.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So it's a bit premature for player of the season, but in pub chat, Matt, that's what I briefly wanted to have a look at. I don't want us to pick our, you know, top one. I think we can probably just about pick a top three at the moment. But the club have officially opened their player of the season voting. I think it goes until just about the end of the month. We at the Tarlhurst End would like to do ours at the end of the season because who knows what's going to happen, and certainly in this season anything can happen. So the players that are kind of in the mix at the moment, you've got Andy Yeardom, Yaku Meite, Liam Moore, Tyler Blackett and John Swift. Those are the players that I've mentioned because those are the only players who have started 25 league games or more. You got likes of Andy Runamotas, only played 20 league games this season, and we were at 40, by the way, so that's half. And, I'm not sure who else you really look at after that. Players like Emiliano Martinez only played 12, so has Matt Miazga, so I don't think they can really be in with a shout unless they, you know, score a winning penalty on the last day of the season. So what's your overview of the player of the season standings at the moment then? What sort of names jump out to you? What sort of, you know, is it... Is this one of those years where we look at the options in front of us and just go, well, that explains why we're in a relegation battle?
Yeah, I think you summed it up. It does, listing off the names, does explain why we are in a real relegation battle when you're looking at two guys that have come in January as potential player of the season. For me, probably the obvious name is Yeardom. He's been one of our most consistent performers throughout the season, I think, and considering he's been brought in on a free as well, he's adapted well. There's been a lot of change at the heart of defence that we talked about throughout the season, a lot of change with the goalkeeper as well that he's had to deal with. He's played with numerous players in front of him, Meite, McCleary, Aluko. So it's all been, the side's been chopped and changed, and for me, he's been one of the more consistent players. I feel like I know what I'm going to get from Yeardom. So he'd probably be my standout my number one contender for player of the season. I don't know how you feel about that nomination.
I must admit.
Or how it aligns with yours.
Yeah, I must admit that Yeardom is pretty much the standout for me as well at the moment. Liam Moore won it pretty convincingly last season. Of course, Ali Alhabsi the year before that. I don't think Moore is necessarily going to be in with a shout this year. I think that it's, you know, 50% popularity contest, 50% how well you performed over the season, and
yeah.
Moore isn't quite as popular as he used to be at this club for various reasons, and, you know, the fact that we've been a bit terrible as well this year. Blackett, as I mentioned, Blackett and Swift, because they've played a lot, but I don't think they'll do enough to figure in many fans' votes. And then I think you're looking at Yaku Meite. I think, for me, he's in my top three. He's not done enough to win it, because, you know, a striker who scored 8 goals in a season is not player of the season material unless he scores 10 between now and the end of the season. Then I'll consider it. And I think to my top three in probably the order that I think it's going to be in at the moment is it's going to be Yeardom, then Mate, then Winamosa. I think even though Winamosa's not played that much, I think he'll, as the popularity vote comes into it, I think he'll favour, or he'll get quite a lot of favour from the fans in that sense.
Yeah, I probably would switch Winamosa and Mate, or I'd definitely put Winamosa in second, just for the impact I feel he's had on the side. And you can feel how much we've missed him in the games that he's not been there, and how open we've been and how exposed we've been. And for a guy to have come into the team and this really been his breakthrough season in senior football, it's been really impressive to see how well he's taken and adapted to the game at this level, and how much of a crucial figure he's made himself within our first 11. And then, looking at Mate, he's been a bit streaky. He had that period where he banged in a few goals, and I think it was about 5 or 6 goals in 7 or 8 games, and he was a bit streaky there. Bodvarsson as well had a start where he was, I think he scored 6 or 7, didn't he, in as many games. He's been a bit streaky as well. Swift has come and gone. There's been moments of magic, like the other week against with the free kick. There's not really been too many consistent performers from the guys that are on permanent contracts. It's, you're looking towards the loans that have really made, you feel like they've made a more of an impact this season. Martinez has been very impressive. Miazga, I think you know from, if you follow my Twitter account, I'm a big Matt Miazga fan, and
I think he's been the best loanee that we've signed.
I think he's been the best loanee. If you look at the comparison or the difference in security, and even as a fan, I feel more secure with him at the back than I did with Thiago Ilori. That's not taking anything away from Ilori, because he's a very decent footballer. The problem was he was just a bit culpable when it came to defending his box and so on and so forth. And all the things that Miazga does well, like winning his headers, we just look so much more secure with him. So I think if we're going off kind of impact that each player has had, I'd probably order it with Yeardom, Winamosa, and then Miazga.
Yeah, I think if the voting would have been taking place right at the end of the season, maybe we'll see on the Tarlest End one, I think if you do add in those extra 6 games and let Miazga continue to make the impact, I think he's got a much better chance. But
yeah, definitely.
At this stage, he's played 12 times. Ultimately, I mean, how many of those games have we won? I don't know to count at the moment, but it's a difficult to think that he will curry too much favour with the fans. Quick point on Mate before we finish off, and I'm just created a little stat here, is that the months of September, December, January, February and April all have one thing in common, and that is that they're all months that Yaku Mate has not scored a goal in. So you said he's streaky. He scored once in August, a bunch of times in October, November, and twice in March, and that's it. Which, you know, in terms of player
defines
season
streaky.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, we've been fortunate that his streakiness and Bodvarsson's streakiness haven't overlapped, and
I'm pretty sure all of Bodvarsson's goals came in August.
They were pretty much all August, September, weren't they? They were very early on towards the beginning of the season. Then Mate went to number 9 and kind of took over the mantle and looked incredibly streaky until the end of November. Until November, and then the goals have totally dried up, haven't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing with championship players, isn't it? You want players like Mate to, as the, you know, he's still a bit young and still, as we say, a bit streaky. You want him to be the perhaps the number 2 striker behind a number 1 like Oliveira, but we haven't had that sort of luxury for the entire season, and even, you know, these past few weeks it's been a bit on and off. So, yeah, that player of the season vote, as I say, Tyler Sten will be waiting until the season is over. The clubs is open now. And find someone out of that lot is all I can say.
Yeah.
For fans wanting to vote on it, of course, we'll keep an eye on it and let you know who wins. But for now, we will jump into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
So, John House kicks us off this week with a message on Twitter saying that the whole game only looked bad because of the other results. Before Preston, with these two games, most would have settled for with still being out of the relegation zone. And on that vein, Daniel says that he thinks it just feels like anything can happen now. Classic championship where teams can beat each other left and right will go down to the wire, probably. And that is a sentiment that I think we've certainly echoed in the past few moments. And just a quick question before we go on to the next point, Matt, is that John says, before Preston with these two games, most would have settled with being out of the relegation zone. 3 points from those two games, do you think, in, you know, all objectivity, is that okay?
It's perfectly fine, isn't it? One win from two. I really can't complain. It's about picking up wins as and where you can. Preston came to us in a great vein of form, and we managed to get 3 points off of them. So, yeah, I mean, 3 from 6, can't really argue with that. If you're in a relegation fight and you're picking up 3 points in every other game, yeah, fine. I'm not too unhappy. It was just more the fact that all the other teams won around us on Saturday that, like he said, John said, it makes it look an awful lot worse than it has been.
Yeah, it's a good point there. And Stephen Lewandon on the same vein as Daniel said, it's a fact that it will go down to the last game of the season. Eddie Corr saying that form has improved since Gomez came in. If we go down, it was the lost points early in the season that did it. I'd actually back this team to dig out a result when it needed more than any recent Reading team. And well, I'm kind of I have my reservations about that to an extent, Matt, because Jose Gomez oversaw the Reading team that conceded a late equaliser against Rotherham at home, conceded a late equaliser away to Bolton. Didn't do particularly well at home to Swansea in a 4-1 defeat. That was one of his first games in charge, yes. But we've been beaten 4-0 by Sheffield United. We've been beaten 3-0 by Leeds. In terms of this team's ability to sort of, you know, get over the line, the winning mentality, I do obviously think that Gomez has improved it. But do you think it's improved quite enough to be a non-relegation threatened team?
Yeah, I'm just having a look at the form table over the last 12 games, and we're currently sat 13th in kind of mid-table form with 17 points from 12 games. So if you think about that in comparison to the total number of points that we've picked up this season, you're looking at nearly half of our points coming in the last 12 games of a 40-game season. So I do think there's been a real significant upturn in what Gomez has done. Yes, we've lost the odd game, and the ones we have lost, we've conceded a fair few goals. We've conceded 4 against Swansea, 3 at home against Leeds, and then we had the defeat away to Sheffield United as well. At the end of the day, the table's still going to be showing, as you've collected 0 points on that day, goal difference still isn't too much of a worry, with Rotherham looking slightly worse than us. So for me, yeah, I do think Gomez deserves a lot of credit, and I do think there's been a real upturn in what he's been doing with limited resources, to be honest. He's had to get rid of players, had to be, as in his words, be creative within the transfer market. We've utilised the loan market very well. And yeah, I do think he deserves some credit with the football that we're playing at the moment.
Well, yeah, the football we're playing is an improvement as well, and fans wanted entertainment. Remember when Stan was being sacked, and Clement gave that in the form of some high-scoring games that didn't always go our way, and that's to an extent been continued, but now we're playing a bit more than, you know, your classically entertaining brand of football, and fans, no matter what style of football you play, you'll always go home happy with two goals to turn around the 2-1 defeat into a 3-2 win at home, and away from home at Ipswich as well. That sort of win will always send fans home happy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So Lee Burgess then asks, do you think 2 more wins will be enough for Reading to stay up, and which games will we win? 2 wins will take us to 46 points. That'll be enough. You know, if Rotherham will have to pick up 8 points pretty much in the next 6 games to beat that. with obviously Millwall and the rest of them picking up just about the same or less. I think that probably would be enough, but I think it might well come down to goal difference. Of the games we've got left, I must be honest, I think the Brentford game is a must win. And I think we're going to... I think we've got a huge chance of picking up a win either at home to West Brom or away to Middlesbrough. Because those are two teams, kind of the same about Bristol City, but I'm less optimistic about that. Those two games, West Brom and Middlesbrough, are two teams that could well be watching. I mean, Boa certainly at the moment are. West Brom's just about starting to watch their season unravel before their eyes. And in the last few weeks, the pressure that is going to be on those players. Yes, there's a lot on us, but going to place like Middlesbrough, there's always a little bit of a sense of it's a free hit, etc., etc. So the pressure on those players, especially when you're at home against West Brom, the fans at Middlesbrough on their own players' back, I think those are as good a chance as you can really hope for at this stage of the season. So I think two wins might be enough. I'm just about erring to say it will be. And I think those, you know, two out of those three games, I think are probably the most likely for it to come.
Yeah, I do think, you'd hope that two wins from six would be enough, and perhaps a draw here or there. Like you say, I do think the Brentford game at home is going to be a real crucial one. They haven't got the greatest away form, and as much as they are one of the better footballing sides, you could say they've got a bit of a soft underbelly as well, and can be got at. So I think if we're up for it and we can really get at them, and the likes of someone like Mate, if we can utilise him and kind of almost be a bit of a bully boy, we can look to try and cause some damage against them. Burrow in a dismal run of form, and in the last eight, they're bottom of the form table in the Championship. It looks like their hopes of playoff spots slipping away from them. That may be gone with two games to go in the season when we go and play them. So fingers crossed, by then their players are on the holiday or on their holidays.
Yeah, well, let's hope that by the time we play them, that is the ideal date. And Dave Della Riviere saying as well, shame about the whole result, but we lucked out last weekend, so we have to take the rough with the smooth. Where do you think the next points are coming from? I can't help but think we'll get something against Boa, as they aren't having a good time at present, which certainly echoes what we're going into there. And I know the Birmingham home game is at the end of the season, but I'm absolutely avoiding saying that that's going to be one of the two, you know, that a win against them will edge us over the line, because last day of the season, I do not want to think about having to win that game.
Yeah, you really don't want to be having to win that game, especially with someone like Shea Adams, who's been in such great form this season, banging in the goals, and you don't want him coming to the Madesi and kind of continuing that run of form and earning himself a move to the Premier League, for example.
No, we certainly don't do very well when it comes to crunch games that we have to win. And JPR asks, does Jose Gomez stay if it's League One? His job, after all, was survival. And Clive Ratton added on to that, would he want to stay or would they remove him? I don't think the club would sack Jose Gomez if we go down. I don't think the club has the money to, unless there's a relegation break in his contract. I also don't think that they realistically believe they'd get someone better. Because, as we've kind of just discussed, his form in the Championship of Reading is relatively decent, certainly comfortable mid-table. So I don't think he'll be sacked. I don't know whether he'd get another opportunity. I know he's always wanted to manage in England. He's unlikely to just go back to Portugal because he got relegated with Reading, or if he gets relegated with Reading. He might get an opportunity somewhere else, but I honestly don't think he necessarily would. So I think he'd probably end up staying.
I think the decision's up to him, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think, if he wants to stay, then I think the fans would be over the moon if he wants to stay, to be honest. I can't see many fans within the fan base being opposed to him staying with us going down to League One. It's then coming down to what sort of contract of the hierarchy offered him. Is there a release break where he gets a reduced payoff or whatever, if relegation is the outcome of the season? But I do think we could do an awful lot worse than him being at the helm come the start of next season.
Well, yeah, hopefully it's not something that we'll actually have to worry about.
There fingers crossed. The other question is, who do we, if he does go, then who do we look to go get in? But that's a whole new conversation for itself, and we need to find out which league we're in before we can start having it, unfortunately.
Well, hopefully one that we won't need to have, but I do know what you mean, because there's, if you know, if the passing football style takes us down, is it the sort of thing we stick with? Do we go somebody's academy or sign players? God, it's probably going to take an entire podcast, and luckily I think that we probably would do an entire podcast on Reading going down to League One, so we'll save that issue for if and when we cross that bridge. Peter Griffiths asked the last question of the mailbag. Simply, does anyone know what has happened to Saïd Ezzatalahi? The simple answer to that is no. If you follow him on Instagram...
I'm also no.
He's occasionally in Reading. It looks like he's quite often in England, Saïd Ezzatalahi. If you look at his Instagram, he, you know, goes around doing his little bits and dressing up in his nice clothes and whatnot. It's pretty much what he posts about. There is no indication from the club that he's not with the club, but there's also no evidence that he is with the club because he's not been playing. And ultimately, it wouldn't surprise me too much. I don't know, to be honest, how long his loan deal, you know, lasts, what kind of conditions are on it, because it was only announced that it's going to be a season-long loan when he came in. But if the club have decided we've got six games to go, he's not going to be fit, I wouldn't necessarily be sure why they keep him around. So don't expect to see him is all I'm going to say, but I certainly don't say that.
I'm not getting my hopes up. Not getting my hopes up for seeing him appear again in a Reading shirt.
And to be honest,
the cameos we did see, I was quite impressed with, to be honest.
Yeah,
it was a real shame that he did get injured.
This is true, but to be honest, when we're six games into the end of the season, he's never played under this manager. Is it really that important for him to come back into the team?
I don't think it's the right time for him to come back into the team. It'd probably take him a bit of time to get up to speed as well, with in terms of match fitness and sharpness. So really, we're set with what we've got, and we can kind of thank you for turning up. But it was a bit unfortunate that you got injured, really.
Yeah, hopefully we've not lost too much money in that sort of deal. And maybe, you know, maybe Gomez does like what he has seen of him, and his fitness is going to clear up. Maybe there's a chance of keeping hold of him for next season, which I wouldn't be mad about at this point in time. But that is something that really, as fans, we are out in the cold about. So let's talk about something that will certainly be chilly, and that is Carrow Road on Wednesday night in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So here we go then. The classic free hit. If you want one free hit of a game anytime, any season, it is away to the league leaders when they've won God knows how many games on the trot. 7:45 away to Norwich on Wednesday, April 10th. They're top of the league. They're the highest scorers. We've lost to them in our last four meetings. And Matt, you pointed out very helpfully on Twitter that they've scored 14 goals in that time, although there was one particular game when they did very well. This is, you know, all I'm going to say is that Norwich have to slip up somewhere. They are not going to win every single game between now and the end of the season. This may as well be the one that they slip up in.
Yeah, you're hoping they've got to slip up at some point, but they've only lost once since the turn of January and turn of the new year, and that was away to Preston. You look at the teams that they've dropped points against in 2019, it's Brentford, West Brom, Sheffield United and Preston. Brentford, the only one in the bottom half of the table there, and even then, you could easily say they're streaks ahead of us in terms of quality. So it's going to be, for me, it's a real uphill battle. This is one where it is literally a free hit. If we take a 0-0 or nick a 1-1, fantastic. Anything here is a bonus for me. They've won the last eight as well, so they're in. They're the best team in this league, and some of the football they've been playing as well in recent weeks has been really, really good stuff. I think I can't remember who it was, but someone compared it to Manchester City in the Premier League. You know, when they kind of turn it on and the other teams within the league just can't, it's kind of like the inevitable is going to happen and Norwich are going to win.
Well, it is kind of like Man City in a way, isn't it? When it's the ultimate confidence that comes with being, I mean, they are currently 8 points clear of third place, so they are going to go up. They've scored at least three goals in 10 of their last 12 home matches.
It's just silly, isn't it?
The problem is with this game is that even if we're 2-0 up with 5 minutes to go, there is going to be a serious doubt that we're going to win this game.
Yeah, 100%. Best thing we can hope for is a Timu Pukkio in goal.
Well, he does love it in the back of the net, so at least they keep that up. One of the interesting stats as well, actually, in terms of this game, is that they have been Norwich versus Reading has been a complete goal fest, in the sense that there's only been one match in the last 11 meetings has featured a clean sheet, which was a 0-0 draw in the Premier League some time ago. One draw in 10 as well. So the team, you know, it's a case of you score 4, I score 5, and I wouldn't necessarily bet on Reading for this one. But let's talk predictions then. Just to recap what happened on the weekend, Johnny Williams was the only person to predict a whole win. So the state of play in the prediction league is now Handbags on 31, Ollie 30, Johnny 29, and Wim, the early season leader, back on 28. And also a quick word, Tom Crocker, if you haven't been listening to the weekend preview, he features in our prediction league. He will be leaving us at the end of the season because he has already moved jobs, in fact, from the Wokey paper to the Bournemouth Echo. So if you want to follow Tom Crocker on Twitter, he is now fully invested in all things Cherries. So he will be moving on from the Tarlow Stand, or might have already even moved on from the Tarlow Stand, in fact. So good luck to Tom, and thank you very much to him for coming on the show and talking to Reading. We, as you know, even when the professionals come on, we pay them in gratitude rather than anything else. So a huge thanks to Tom for that, but alas, he is pretty much destined to finish pretty near the bottom of the prediction league in his season in it. So, prediction time then, Matt. What's the official verdict for Norwich Reading?
I'm gonna go really optimistic and go 3-0 Norwich.
Yeah,
I think we're gonna get turned over, to be honest.
I think we'll score. I think there's probably going to be at least 2 minutes of this game where we think we might get something. And I know that's not very much in 90.
Yeah.
But I think there is going to be that 2 minutes. And maybe it's a sneaky Yaku Mate goal or something. And Norwich have been involved in some ridiculous games this year.
There's definitely goals guaranteed. If you look at their games, they've been involved in some goal fests, like you say.
Yeah, and I'm convinced that they're going to slip up at some point this season. That said, I'm going to pick a 3-1 defeat for the prediction league because, you know, I've got to pick up some points, really. I'm thinking about my position in that, although I'm certainly not going to be winning it. But yeah, this Norwich game, it is one of those that I don't see many teams picking up points over this midweek set of fixtures. It seems like there's bigger fish to fry coming up, and maybe Jose Gomez will just... do you think we'll benefit from having the pressure off us, or do you think ultimately we kind of need that tension at the moment? We need that fire in our belly, something to fight for, and a game we believe we can win?
I don't think the tension is a bad thing, but I think you'd hope that the tension would still be there. You're fighting for your life to stay up. The players' contracts, I'm sure some of them, however much their contract is, will depreciate by an awful lot if they've got a relegation clause in there. So they've got a vested interest regardless of who we're playing. It's just a manner of, you have to go out there, be professional, do your job. If you come up against a team that's better than you on the day, hold your hands up and say they're better than you. But I don't feel like this current crop now would have rolled over as easily as earlier in the season in this game. I feel like we could hold out slightly longer.
Yeah, so we're going to make it to 7 minutes rather than 5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, fingers crossed.
Exactly. That is really the case. And any Reading fans going up to Norwich on Wednesday night, I doff my cap to you because it's going to be
well done to them.
And hopefully we'll all be jealous of you witnessing one of the most important wins of Reading's. You know, definitely if we win, let's put it this way. If we win, it's the most important win of the season. At that stage, so that would be what we're after, and that draws to a close this episode of the Tarlow Stand podcast. Thank you very much, Matt Lawrence, for joining us.
You're available. No problem.
Panners and Nutmegs on Twitter, of course.
Yes,
and we will be back next week after not only the Norwich game, of course, the Brentford one as well, which you can catch the preview for in Weekend Preview later in the week with Ollie. This is a game that Reading are just going to have to hope that a couple of decisions go their way, hope that a couple of balls bounce their way, and hope that Mo Barrow learns how to score from 3 yards. If we can do that, then we got a chance. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crowds always